Yes.
All right. We are back in session. Thank you, everyone. We are now on item number 48.
Accept report from Portland United Against Hate Coalition on outcomes of 2017-18 special appropriations grants.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, this next report is from Portland United Against Hate, which is a grant-funded program currently run through the Office of Community and Civic Life. Today, we will hear from three panels that consist of program staff, grant recipients, and program partners. With that, I'd like to call up the first panel, Carrie Coe from the Office of Community and Civic Life, Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, from As the Spirit Moves Us, and Casey Jama from Unite Oregon. Welcome, everyone, and please state your name for the record before you begin your testimony or presentation.
Hello, Commissioner
and
Mayor.
Hello, is your mic?
Can you hear me?
There we go.
Great. Okay, thank you. Hello, everyone. My name's Carrie Coe. I'm with Office of Community and Civic Life and the Program Coordinator for Portland United Against Hate. First, thank you very much for your ongoing support of this work and this program and for having us here today. As Commissioner said, we'll have three panels to offer some feedback and reporting on the outcomes of our grants. So first, this panel is going to share some big picture successes. The second panel will focus on the outcomes of the grants. And the third panel will share testimony about how PUA impacts the work of communities with our partners, including speakers from the Portland Bureau of Transportation and Southeast Uplift. So let me start by grounding us quickly. Desiree Melton, a black woman and an associate professor of philosophy at Notre Dame, wrote a recent article titled, "Why Report Injustice When Being Justly Treated is Unimaginable?" In her article, she explains, "If our imagination is full of the ugly ways that authorities interact with people like us, if it's cluttered with doubt and distrust we know we are likely to face, then we might be unable to even conceive of doing anything more than disclosing an injustice to a person we trust, let alone turning to authority." Furthermore, she suggests that expecting black women who have been harassed, assaulted, threatened to report is asking them to do something Herculean, to override an overwhelming number of experiences in which they have been doubted, disbelieved, ignored, treated unjustly, and told to keep silent. This leaves our imagination blunted and a void where justice should be. Professor Melton articulates the experience of many PUA Coalition members, and this perspective is one of the many that guided our work in this recent grant and the creation of the pilot hate incident tracking tool that you're hear about today. The challenge of addressing hate and hate violence is complex and woven into the very social and cultural fabric of our nation. This reality is a call to action for those with influence and resources to work with those most impacted to find sensible solutions. The report today will focus on the outcomes of the grants and PUA's work over the last 18 months, and will show that Portland United Against Hate has taken the task of imagining justice and sensible solutions seriously. As you well know, Portland United Against Hate is a 64-member coalition of community organizations, neighborhood groups, and the City of Portland's Office of Community and Civic Life, with a mission to track, respond to, and prevent acts of hate while providing the support that our communities need. In the 2017-18 budget, City Council set aside $350,000 in special appropriations funding for competitive grants to do capacity building, training, and to pilot a proof-of-concept data project to demonstrate the feasibility of a community-led incident tracking tool with the wraparound support resources built in. 13 grant partners were selected, and since July 2017, they have collectively exceeded the goals of their projects. The core outcomes are the pilot of the hate incident tracking tool called Report Hate PDX, the creation of tools and resources to combat hate, and an increased capacity within communities to respond to, interrupt, and be prepared for hate incidents. So we're going to take a second to look at each of these. In September 2018, PUA launched Report Hate PDX, an online and in-person tool for tracking hate incidents and providing resources. I'm going to quickly review it and go to the website, but I would encourage you to look at it further and invite us in to talk about it with your staff if you like. So there we go. So this is the website, reporthatepdx.com. Using this, anyone can report an incident online. There's a reporting feature that takes you to a form. And you can also be connected to report in person with one of PUA's 13 partner organizations who were grantees. And they can act as a support in reporting or in getting access to resources. You can also get a variety of resources through the site. And we're intending it to be sort of a one-stop shop for what to do when a hate incident happens. This site is the beta version that was created during the grant cycle, and moving forward, you can expect an updated version at the end of January with a few added capabilities, and you'll hear from Marcus Mundy, the executive director of the Coalition of Communities of Color, who's the lead organization on the project, as part of the second panel. So during the grant cycle, with this very limited release of the website, over 138 incidents were reported, and the PUA Coalition provided resources and support to many of those people and communities. One example is a nonprofit reported that a community garden youth volunteer had showed a hate-oriented hand sign in a photo at an event that they held. We supported that staff in understanding more about the hand signals of hate groups, of thinking through some of the approaches to having conversations with the families, and to connect them with resources for both the family and for the staff at that nonprofit.
Carrie, could you just move the cursor so this isn't showing in the screen?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Immediately confronting white supremacist action, even something that can seem almost small, like a hand signal, is crucial to creating an environment where that kind of behavior is unacceptable and where diverse communities feel welcome. Frontline staff need this kind of support, both in nonprofits, but also here in the city. PUA makes those connections and can be that resource. The second outcome was the creation of tools and resources, including things like a rapid response toolkit and a trauma-informed best practices kit, among other things. On the second panel, Shayla Mosley from POIC will talk more about the outcomes and show a video about youth and hate violence that POIC made during their grant. You can see some examples of the interrupting hate action cards in English and Somali, Arabic, and Spanish. They're also available in Chinese and Vietnamese. All of these resources are available on PUA's website and also through me if you'd like physical versions. The third major outcome was increased capacity within communities to respond to, interrupt, and be prepared for hate incidents. Together, the grant partners held 152 trainings for more than 2,000 people, did outreach and engagement to almost 10,000 people in 11 languages, and supported 38 youth in leading anti-hate programming. This kind of capacity building to communities most affected by hate decreases the impact of hate violence. It allows support for those targeted to heal, and it promotes prevention. A training isn't just people in a room. It's tools, it's skills and resources to practically equip vulnerable community members. Ezekiel Mbabu and Salat Ibrahim will share their experience with community capacity building and hate incidents also as part of the second panel. The final element of PUA's work that I'll share is the long-term vision. So the coalition goals led the initial grant making 2 years ago, and by mid-2018, the coalition was ready to assess the work and plan next steps. Nearly half the coalition members worked over several months to develop a strategic direction for PUA's work and to help answer the question, what is PUA's role in ending hate violence? The coalition decided that over the next 2 years, they'll focus on community capacity building, rapid response, and policy and data work. You can find full details or more details about this in your packet on page 34 and 35, a summary of the work that we did. These grants help to launch incredible work, but the coalition is far from done, as this issue is far from over. In the next 6 months, we are going to do a public launch of Portland, of Report Hate PDX, including an upgrade of the tool to make it mobile-friendly, add multilingual capacity. We're going to do an expansion on the capacity building work that we do, more trainings, more outreach, and deeper community engagement work, training people to be de-escalators on public transit, working with those targeted by hate, doing some upstream thinking with faith leaders in the community, and supporting more youth to be leaders. Only to name a few items. So this is the work of Portland United Against Hate and the outcomes of the recent grant cycle. The rest of the speakers today will speak to more about this and their experiences. Before we bring more people up, though, I'd like to introduce Casey Jama, Executive Director of Unite Oregon and a key partner in the PUA Coalition. Unite Oregon is in the middle of and has organized a crucial listening tour around the state with Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, and Casey will speak to some of the strengths of our partnership in this national moment. But first, Rabbi Deborah Kolodny, founder of As the Spirit Moves Us, an active member on PUA's advocacy team, which I'm sure you're all very familiar with, and a steering committee member at PUA. And so thank you again for all of this, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you. As Carrie said, I'm Rabbi Deborah Kolodny from As the Spirit Moves Us, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak with all of you today. I was really struck that the afternoon, there seems to be a theme this afternoon of restoring faith, and which is impossible to do without taking concrete operational action. And I really think that a huge part of the work that PUA has been doing is restoring faith in this community and in this city and in the community organizations that serve those who want this to be a safe and livable place. It has been a trying and at times devastating 2 years. We all know that the 2016 presidential election unleashed a horrifying stream of hate in this country. I remember the first Office of Neighborhood Involvement Budget Advisory Committee meeting after that election, and Commissioner Fritz, I know you do too. We were going about business as usual, and I said something like, I'd like to know how much federal funding the city might lose for maintaining our sanctuary status because I want to see a plan to replace every dollar so there's no question that Portland is safe for immigrants. And the entire conversation shifted. A group of community-facing organizations who had been meeting shared how much more support their constituents needed because of a dramatic uptick in hate incidents. That group expanded after that meeting, and the Portland United Against Hate Coalition was born. We've been working for over 2 years to compassionately and effectively serve those targeted by hate, to train people in their rights and in how to de-escalate situations before they become violent, and to create an accessible trauma-informed data collection system so the information that supports our policy decisions is exponentially more accurate than the FBI or PPB's statistics. The partnership we've created between community organizations who bring trust with their constituents and long-term relationships and expertise and a proven track record of success, and the city, which has a vested interest in safe and livable communities of belonging, has not only increased safety already, it has brought us to the moment where we can soon bring forward real solutions to the epidemic of hate. With the full-fledged launch of our Report Hate PDX data tracking tool in a few weeks, which has already provided information on 138 incidents in about the same time frame that the PPB has handled only 18 hate crimes, we'll be able to see which communities are most targeted, who the perpetrators are, and what tactics they're using. This can not only give direction to law enforcement, but more importantly, it can show us which communities most urgently need transformational interventions to end hate from taking root, and which communities need the most safety and social support work, not to mention culturally and trauma-informed therapeutic care. And we're just getting started. I'd like to share a prediction. Our work is far from over. As long as the current federal administration is in office, hate will continue to escalate. People will feel increasingly emboldened to translate national rhetoric to local violence. Data supports this view. The FBI, which has a huge underreporting problem, found 2017 the third most hateful year since it began collecting statistics in 1992. Observers of this crisis agree that it will last until at least 2 or 3 years after the current administration is out of office, because replacing the elected haters in our federal government will trigger a backlash that is swift and fierce. Here in Oregon, we have a particularly virulent brew of what I call domestic terrorism, concocted from a perfect storm of racism and anti-Indigenousness that was embedded into the founding of our state. We've seen almost 2 centuries of white nationalist organizing and an unfortunate failure of law enforcement to end their reign of terror. So Portland's challenge is unique, and our solutions must tap into every resource we have, which is exactly what the PUA Coalition brings. Without ongoing support from both the community and the city, we can permanently turn the tide. Together we can. Today you'll hear about the incredible work of a diverse coalition working to do what some might consider impossible. On a shoestring budget, we've accomplished so much in such a short time. Tangible outcomes that we can all be proud of, and community building that holds this city together. Together we can keep going. Together we will keep going. PUA's members share with the city a moral imperative to continue this effort. We're grateful for our partnership, to all the commissioners for showing up against hate, and specifically to Commissioner Udalli's unflagging leadership, to Commissioner Fritz for helping us launch, to Commissioner Hardesty in partnering to provide interrupting hate workshops to the Portland NAACP chapter, to the mayor for your past and we hope future willingness to include funding and special appropriations. We urge the city to eagerly invest in our long-term success by funding this work for years to come. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Hardesty. Congratulations for your victory. And so I'm happy to say that in public. So thank you for your leadership. And thank you all, Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Udalli. My name is Casey Chama. I'm the Executive Director of Unite Oregon. I want to thank you all and the Mayor for your investment and support for the Portland United Against the Hate Coalition. Unite Oregon is a very proud member of this coalition, and we've been working collaboratively for the last few years in order to address the hate issues and hate crimes in our city. Our community feels impact for your support and your leadership. In this political climate we are facing a national emergency. Our hope, our government should declare a national emergency on hate crimes and hate incidents rather than fabricated national instead of shutting down our government. I want to share with you a few incidents that are personally impactful to me. Overnight in September 2017, 2 adult males came to campus on Menlo Park Elementary School and spray painted racist slurs on the exterior walls and doors of the building, as well as setting a fire on the external porta potty. That's where my 2 children go to school. On October 2, 2017, two adult males later identified as the same individuals who attacked the Menlo Park spray painted racist slurs and on the exterior walls on the grounds of the three more David Douglas Elementary Schools, Ventura Park, Mill Park, and Lincoln Park. On December 3, 2017, racist graffiti and slurs were found spray painted on exterior walls on Alice Ott Middle School. Suspect was not identified. In 2016, 19-year-old Cornell Malik Bruce Jr. was run over and killed by known white supremacists. How many of us know his name? How many of us remember his history and how he died? That's about 5 minutes away from my home. Unite Oregon has been working on the hate crimes and hate issues for a while. I myself am a member of the task force created by the Attorney General, and recently we held two listening sessions statewide, one in here in Portland and one in Medford, Oregon. Both were packed. Both, the time we slotted was overrun because there were so many stories to be sharing. This is a time for our community to come together. The pain and the suffering that the community are experiencing is underreported. As the statistics indicate, in 2017, 17% of the national data hate crimes increased. That's underreporting. I can tell you, in my own office, we closed the doors of our office because people walked in and started threatening our own offices. And we have to create a safety plan. And that safety plan included shutting, locking the doors. And if you have to come to our office now, you have to call. And that's kind of what we are dealing with. My own staff member, as she was driving, was targeted while in Powell Boulevard. One of the clear indications of these stories are telling us is that sometimes community members are so terrified that they do not report the appropriate people in this community. In conclusion, I'm not telling you anything that you don't know already. What I would like to ask you is to continue to support on Poor Coalition and the work that they have been engaging. We are in crossroads in this country and in this community and this state. What we do, the actions we take will determine what kind of community we want to be and how we want to preserve our dignity and justice for all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Our second panel is on grant reporting. Marcus Mundy from Coalition of Communities of Color, Shayla Mosley from Portland Opportunity Industrialization Center, or POIC, Ezekiel Mbabu from the Lutheran Community Services Northwest, and Salat Ibrahim from African Youth Community Organization. Please come to the test. Well, my staff has decided this is called the testimony table, but I'm convinced there's a more official name for it. And if anyone can figure it out, I will buy you a cup of coffee.
Where's Carla when we need her? She would know the answer to this question.
Welcome, everyone. And please state your name for the record before beginning your piece of the presentation.
All right. My name is Marcus Mundy. I'm with the Coalition of Communities of Color. It's a pleasure to be presenting before you again, commissioners, and for you, commissioner, for the first time. Thank you for welcoming us. Thank you for lending us your Civic Life Bureau. They have been great partners in this work, and they're a joy to work with and very supportive, so you all should know that as well. I'm here to talk about, only five slides or so for me, about the reporting hatepdx.com goals. You know, we're going to be documenting what's happening in our communities, the goals of Report Hate, providing resources and support from culturally specific communities within the tracking tool, and we collect relevant data for informed decision-making and policy. reporthatepdx.com, some of the features. We have a community vetted survey instrument, and this was formed in partnership with all of our members, but also the Coalition of Communities of Color has a Research Justice Institute. So a community vetted survey instrument is important because it relies on the community to participate, to give feedback, to help develop the tool that's used. One thing that we always say is that we are the best arbiters of our own experiences, our own lived experiences. And so this tool reflects that. Everybody who was part of this process contributed. This tool captures various types of incidents, reports various types of perpetrators, and it provides a very safe platform, and safety you'll hear thematically throughout. There's multiple avenues to report these hate crimes and incidents. Right when the tool goes live, it will have an anonymous online component to it, so people feel safe reporting, and it will continue to have what we had in our pilot project, which is trusted community organizations and leaders that they can report that information to. People have to feel comfortable reporting the information that they do, and this tool was built with that in mind. There's a resource guide indexed by the type of services and geography. And you know, one thing you should know about how they report and where it is it's happening in every quadrant of the city. We've had reports from Northwest, Northeast, Southwest, Southeast, and North Portland that were part of this 138 incidents that you'll hear about. In addition to which, on this slide here, 138 incidents from June to November of 2018, but the bulk of those incidents, 98%, occurred just in the last 3 months of 2018. We had a couple of incidents prior to that that were reported as part of this overall, but these numbers here are very illustrative in that you can see the numbers, 33%. Involved discrimination, unfair treatment, 22% harassment. So you know those numbers, but there's a lot more numbers that are in the detailed reports that you all have received. 54% of the people that reported were our Latinx brothers and sisters. 13% of the people that reported were Black or African immigrants that reported, and neither one of those is reflective of our proportion of people in the city. So it's disproportionately affecting certain zones of people in the city. In addition to which, not only is it all over the city, every type of incident was reported. So there's a term we use called perceived discrimination, or how it's reported. So a lot of these aren't necessarily crimes that people can be prosecuted for, but they let you know directionally what's happening in your city. So there are a lot of incidents that need to be reported, that need to be clarified, even though we're not going to have criminal referrals as a result of that. Again, any online tool must have a trusted organizational interface, or know that even if it's anonymized and people can report from where they are, that it is a safe tool to report. These tools take time to integrate and train and let our community know that they exist, but we're taking that time and with the city's continued funding, because I would offer that we are appreciative of the initial grant, but we hope that the grant funding continues. We combine the tool with education and outreach, and not only does this increase the use of the tool, but validates the experiences of harm. You all know from your own experiences, just like the census is underreported, just like incidents of sexual violence to women and others is unreported, the people who are affected the most by these hate crimes are generally those who least report. And there's a whole slew of reasons for that, but that's why this tool and this coalition is so important to making sure that we don't forget that. Again, the power of this tool is the broad definition of hate incident. It doesn't mean that it's a crime, but it's a hate incident. It can be chronicled. And you policymakers can advocate for and make policies that even if they don't make something a crime, they can make sure that it's a better climate for all of us to live in Portland. some logistics. Our launch is January 31st. The platform will be available at that time in English and Spanish. We hope later on to be available in other languages. We will continue to grow, strengthen, and make it mobile ready for the public. And we're going to continue our communications to increase the use of the platform. Again, we had 136 incidents reported in 3 months, and that was with limited distribution using just our community partners. It wasn't as widespread as this new offering is going to be. And so I would expect, you know, not hope, but I would expect that we'll see a lot of activity when it first rolls out. And I would hope that we have a lot of support from the city as it does roll out. So,
Marcus, could I ask you a couple of questions?
Sir.
And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but there's a thorny issue here that I want to discuss and see how we can close a gap. In the previous testimony, it was made clear, and it's made clearer in the report, that there are a number of people, particularly people of color, recent immigrants to the community, who are reluctant to report to the police bureau for a variety of reasons. Right. People have different perceptions of the police bureau, and some people just do not feel comfortable. So part of my broader agenda around public safety is to increase the trust between the public and the police bureau that serves that public. And that, of course, requires recruiting people from the community. It requires training. It requires setting expectations. It requires accountability and holding people to those expectations. But I think we all acknowledge that is a cultural shift, and it takes some time. So we sort of have that arena. Over here, we have this tool that could potentially collect data, and it sounds like you're talking about it goes beyond what is technically the definition of a hate crime. First of all, do I have that correct?
That is correct.
Okay,
is
so correct. How do we so I guess I have sort of two broad questions. Question number one is, rather than creating a, you know, since we're still all the city here and our resources are limited, rather than creating two completely separate and potentially duplicative systems over the long term, how do we bring these two things together, the trust building, the communications, the training, the accountability, the expectations, and the tool you're trying to create on one hand, in terms of using that resource? And the flip side of that question is, if there are people who, for whatever reason, don't feel comfortable reporting to the police, but they report to you, how does that crime ever get addressed? How does it become adjudicated? Who does it? How does the data end up with the police bureau, where that data is then reported to us as a city council? How do we bring these pieces together, given that there's this current lack of trust?
Well, I'm an imperfect vessel to answer that question, but I have some immediate responses, and then you can check with what your own team at OCCL and some smarter people on these panels. But on the question about how do we make one system and come together, my answer there would be gradually, just because these systems are built and this whole process was built that they could come to trusted community partners. That's where they're comfortable. So I believe it still would have to start there. And then, of course, we would work with PPB and the city and other people to try to morph into one system. As far as the reporting, and again, people can tell me if I'm wrong, but as far as the reporting part of it, when they go to trusted partners, they can reveal as much or as little. So some of our trusted partners keep in their vault, you know, the name of the person who reported, the information of the incident, the date, the time. They have all that information. When it goes into the database, it is anonymized and de-identified. However, if the police really do want to get involved with an investigation to remediate something, they can come back to the trusted organization, who can then reach out to the individual and say, this time they want to act. Are you willing to have them contact you? There's conduits for that to happen.
So there is within currently the framework. That opportunity. So
right. If, now, some people will absolutely never put their name when they do it online from their own computer or the library or whatever, you won't be able to track that person. But for those that come into the organizations that they trust and know that their information won't be inordinately shared, then they have a way to go back to the organization who can then go back to that person. So there are conduits that exist.
Okay, and that's a thorough answer. I just want to make sure there's no grounds for misunderstanding, that if somebody believes – yeah, if they go onto the system and they log in and they do share information and it is a hate crime, there's no chance for them to misunderstand that they just reported a hate crime when, in fact, there may never be a closed loop to the police bureau at all, right?
That is true, but I hope, and what I think I've heard from some of the people, again, who have been longer involved in this than I have, is that, you know, the data will be regularly and readily published, and so even people that submitted things anonymously, they'll be able to see their number, their data captured in the numbers, and if they feel, as they get more comfortable, that things are moving in the process, they can come back and let one of their trusted community members know that, yes, I was the one that reported this. I am now ready to elevate it. I see they're starting to address some issues of community. And again, these hate crimes span gender and religion and ethnicity and sexual orientation. We've had the whole gamut reported just in that little 3-month period.
So. And the value I'm trying to get to here, and I appreciate what you're doing in the data collection, I think is critically important. So I want to be very clear. I strongly support it.
Thank you.
We've had testimony as recently as even this morning where people believe they have said something or reported something or made contact with the appropriate authorities, and then it doesn't get acted on because actually they haven't made contact with the appropriate authorities. And so I just want to make sure that at every step possible, we make it really, really clear that if people expect a follow-up, particularly from the police bureau, there has to be direct contact with the bureau. And I realize some people aren't comfortable with that, and that is certainly their decision to make. But I don't want the opposite to happen, where somebody steps forward and think that the police are going to respond, and then they never do, because then that even further erodes public trust in the bureau.
I am fairly certain that particularly for the participants in this program, the community organizations, and you have the list, they have been trained. They make it very clear to people, we can take your name and report it, or we can take it anonymously. But even though they're taking it reporting it anonymously, they still take the name. They have the contact information, so people do have an opportunity to come back around.
Excellent. I appreciate it. Thank you for your responsiveness.
I'd just like to add, I absolutely share the concern of the mayor. I think these processes are daunting in the best case scenario, but for someone who is traumatized and stressed out and not knowing where to turn, I think it could. I haven't been walked through this process myself. Perhaps I should. We could do a mock walkthrough. I want to ensure that there's no confusion about what the end result is, but also just highlight the value of capturing these hateful incidents that don't rise to the criminal level, because it gives us a fuller picture of the true climate in the community, which is not good for a lot of our community members. And I also think we need to get clear about what constitutes a crime, because something may be a hateful incident, may not be a hate crime, but if someone's being menaced and feels that they're under threat of violence, that is a crime. So I think it's really important that we and the Bureau understand these distinctions, because anecdotally I have heard stories about people being threatened, having their, violence threatened against them in the larger context of a hateful incident, and being told that's not a hate crime, there's nothing we can do.
Well, and that very thing, I think, lends itself to what the mayor said about how can we continue to work together as community and the city and your police bureau, and that you can help us with those clarifications. You can help us help the community that we outreach to. So my over-limit presentation, thank you very much, is over. But what I will just say, and you all commissioners should know this, that our group commend you for this effort. There are not a lot of cities doing this work, having these conversations at the city council level. So you don't always hear it, but you should hear that the community supports this effort, and they appreciate you commissioners making this happen. So.
Thank you.
All
right.
Commissioner Hardesty, yes, please.
I think this might be more of a question for you, Mayor. It's my understanding that Portland Police does not investigate hate crimes, that the FBI, in fact, is the law enforcement agency that investigates hate crimes. So I was a bit confused by your statement.
Yeah, so it was really the front door end. People typically will call the Portland Police. They'll actually call your bureau first, the Bureau of Emergency Communications. That will be shuttled to the police bureau and then to the FBI. That's my understanding.
Yeah, my understanding is that Portland Police actually just says we don't investigate hate crimes. You have to contact the FBI. So I would be surprised if they did anything around hate crimes.
That's good to know. I am done. Sheila.
Good afternoon. My name is Sheila Mosley. Thank you, Commissioner Udaly, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Hardesty, and Mayor, Mr. Wheeler.
For being here.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you guys today. I'm a parent mentor with Community Healing Initiative. I've been involved with the POIC Community Healing Initiative for 3 years. The program assists having families with youth involved in the juvenile justice system. The organization has been in the community for over 30 years. I am grateful that I have been provided my family with, that they have provided my family with guidance and support while my son, Michael, entered the juvenile justice system. I am now a peer parent mentor who assists with other parents who are experiencing what I've gone through. On May 11, 2018, my son and three of his friends were visiting the Vancouver Mall. They noticed a truck with the Confederate flag and the image of Donald Trump in the middle. They began to engage the occupants who responded by exiting the truck and chasing them. My son was caught by one of the men who was found to be a member of the Proud Boy, a local white supremacist group. He was assaulted by this individual. To add insult to injury, Vancouver Mall security apprehended my son as the aggressor. He was locked up for something that he did not initiate. Based on this experience, he has experienced trauma and is struggling to the terms with the incident. With the support of PUA, POIC can provide education of hate reporting and outreach for the African American community. With our outreach materials, phone line, brochures, contact card, website, and social media campaign and video, we can reach out to many more community members on what a hate crime is and how to report it. Thank you today for your time.
Thank you. And so could I just ask, maybe sort of as a follow-up to the question, what is your advice to people if they're a victim of a hate crime? What do you recommend they do?
I recommend that they report it to someone that they trust, so that way we can go about trying to figure out if it's actually a hate crime or if it's just a gesture, and then go from there.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. I'm curious, what was the outcome for your son?
Well, they charged him, and then after we showed them the videos and stuff, they end up dropping it.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And I think I'm supposed to play you a video right now.
Oh. Hate crimes for African Americans are underreported because, as we say, Black Lives Matter, they don't. To the folks that are committing the crimes and folks in power that can make a difference.
Just people being biased.
Growing up, there's been a lot of experience dealing with more racial slurs.
We're late 80s. when a young Ethiopian gentleman was coming home from work, and he was beaten to death by a group of white skinheads.
One of the perpetrators of the crime happened to be on my football team in high school. I started to notice the cats he was hanging out with, and then eventually, sometime later, he was convicted for the murder in Southeast Portland.
So-called routine stop turned into an incident where I, you know, don't get to see my children.
All the stuff that I've gone through is not okay. And all this time I've been thinking it's my fault, or I could have done something.
I know my son is traumatized. He doesn't want to say it. He's 18 now. He doesn't want to say it or admit it or don't even know what he's feeling. But he's just like, it's over with. I don't want to talk about it. I don't care. I'm done with it. Leave it alone.
And generally that young people will lose some part of their personhood, some part of their dignity and self-respect because they're engaging or having to engage someone else's hate.
And unfortunately, that level of trauma then comes out and manifests itself in sometimes in very destructive ways.
There are microaggressions now. It happens so often, so it makes you think, did this happen? Am I sensitive? Am I crazy? It makes us question who we are because it's a part of America's DNA.
But in the end, we're still dealing with hate crime.
Nationally, hate crimes are on the rise, and there is data to support that.
From my perspective, I see a spike in hate crimes. Good news is that there's a lot more attention in trying to combat hate crime.
And try to understand, like, it has to be something deeper besides what the action is, but it has to be something causing the action.
If any crime is perpetrated against you, if somebody does something to you and they do it and let you know they've done it because of what you look like, because of how you speak, because of where they think you're from, because of a perceived physical ability or disability, because of the language you speak, because of religious or symbolic wear that you have on, that's a hate crime. And I found that people don't report because they don't believe anything's going to be done about it.
And a lot of times we accept the fact that that's just the way it is.
I think people are scared that we don't have a voice. And so that's maybe why we don't speak up about the little things. And that's why things like what happened at Hollywood Mac Station became so devastating.
If you witness a hate crime, I think it's still your responsibility to report it, to report what you've seen.
I still have conversations with people and they relate a story. And my question is, did you report it?
If it goes unreported, our society considers it as not happening.
If you don't report it, then there's no learning from the experience.
So what do you do if you need to report a hate crime?
First thing you can do is document to the best of your ability what you saw happen, where were you at, what facts you know, and get those things down.
One thing you can do is contact our support line, parent hotline, at 971-352-6822.
You can report it, and we can work with it. But if we don't name it, we can't change it.
And we should speak up on what we see in front of us, whether that's someone being watched at a grocery store just because the color of their skin, or that's someone being called out because they're wearing a hijab on the max.
I think that's probably the biggest hurdle, is some people believe there's just really not a problem. And therein lies, you know, we can't move forward until we accept that, in fact, there is a problem.
So by reporting it either on a hotline or through the city of Portland is very important so that they know there are communities that are at risk for hate.
Remember, this is not a substitute for filing a police report. And if this is an emergency, dial 911.
Now I'm reaching out, and now I'm getting the help that I need. And I encourage everyone else who's going through similar situations, whether that has to do with being abused at school and dealing with hate or being abused at home and it filtering into school life. I encourage it.
Well, that answered a lot of questions. We should have just played that first.
Yeah, we wanted to get our
good video.
Good afternoon, Ms. Mayor and member of the City Council. Thank you for the opportunity of listening to the community's testimony about hate crimes and bias incident crimes. My name is Ezekiel Mbabu. I'm a crime victim advocate with Lutheran Community Services Northwest in Portland. I am originally from the Democratic Republic of Congo. I moved in the U.S. in 2011 and have lived in North Portland for 7 years. As a program that already provides victim advocacy services to vulnerable population, including refugee and immigrant community in the area, we have seen a need for education to our new neighbor regarding what hate crime is. People sometimes come from other countries where there are different standards around what is acceptable or tolerated. And many of people we work with have been surprised to learn that many of the common experiences are something that, as a society, we know is unacceptable and might be a crime. By providing education to people so they understand what hate incidents are or are not, we help empower victims and communities. We have worked hard to create materials for people in a variety of languages, as we know language barrier can be an obstacle for people in accessing support, and have done outreach to over 1,400 people. And we have seen that having a coalition with a variety of partners has been critical in reaching different targeted groups. The POA coalition as a whole has done outreach to 10,000 people in our community. The POA coalition is working on collecting hate crime data so we can do a better job understanding and dealing with this problem. But our priority is to providing support to communities, especially where otherwise there may not be much support, being a point of contact for vulnerable community. I would like to tell my short story to support my above allocation. As an immigrant family from Congo that moved in North Portland and have experienced hate crimes and bias incident crimes. After we moved in our house, a group of teenagers would come several times and spit at my front door, pouring water on the door and ring the doorbell. When I would come out to check, they would run and shout, "African, go back to Africa." In African culture, spitting at my door is the same as spitting on my face and is the ultimate way to dismiss me and my family. I think even in the U.S., spitting on someone or their property is an extremely disrespectful act. Even so, it happened several times. Later on, I was told that the spit on the door meant hate. And then came the attack on my children. They bullied my children and tried to provoke them to a fight. My family did not know what to do and whom to turn to. We got frustrated and traumatized, and my children got scared. In the school, another scenario happened to my 11th grade son. His classmate will tell him face to face, "Go back to Africa." When the boy had enough, he reacted by a punch. Unfortunately, he was sent home for 2 days, and nothing was done to the one who provoked him. As a parent, how would you feel if they do it to your children? Like my family, many other families are going through situation and don't report because they are not aware of what to do and how to seek for help. Mr. Mayor, member of the council, our community needs access to resources, education, and support. This is widespread in Portland, and by providing this support and resources, we start to shine a light on the real problem, and then we can move forward and heal these wounds. My family was grateful that someone explained these actions are hurtful and not acceptable. It empowered my family to take positive actions, to take care of ourselves and involve as well to support others in the community experiencing similar issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pass the mic over. The mic. Okay. Garabon accent.
Good afternoon. I don't speak English, but I'll speak Somali.
Salad Ali Ibrahim.
My name is Salad Ali Ibrahim.
And
I came to this country as a refugee from Somalia.
In 2013.
Yeah, I came to this country in
2013.
Yeah, coming to America and from Somalia and Africa, I was very happy and grateful when I came here. Yeah, the story I had and when I was in Africa, in America, was that people and welcome each other and support each other.
Marka waxaan rabaa inaan qasiir ugu dhacday 13kii bishii 12aad yaan rabaa inaan xogaa inaan ila wadaago.
But when I came here, there was a story that happened that changed my mind, the way I was thinking.
Kadib marka waxaan gateway aan imaaday.
Yeah, there was a day I was in a gateway transit center.
Marka tareenki aan rabay aan raac mar raacayna mid kale aan raacay.
So I was stuck in a train, but I took a train which is not the one I wanted.
Yeah,
I was going to Gresham, but I took a train which is going to Clackmas. Yeah, when I noticed that this is not the train I supposed to take, so then I get it off the first stop. Then when I get off the first stop, then I start walking back to the... And it was a raining day, and it was very cold. And I called my son, who was at home that time. Yeah, when I was talking to the phone with my son, I saw a white man who walking there. Then I said to my son, okay, there is someone here and I don't speak English, so if you can talk to him, he can direct me where I want. Then I went after the man, and the only word English I knew was help, help. Then I just approached
the man.
Then when I said help, help, the man looked at me and started shouting at me, and he was screaming and shouting. And I was someone who lost and don't know anywhere to go, so I just pointed the phone and tried to give the phone and talk to him. And my phone was, my son was on the phone and then the man turned to me and started screaming at me, and he was using, I didn't know English, but my son was telling me he was on the phone, and the man started talking very bad language and hateful language. Yeah, my son said that that man is a dangerous, don't go after him and just leave him alone. Then I just went through the street. Then I walked the train track, then when I was going, I just reach the train stop?
Yeah,
luckily there was a Somali man who was waiting a train there and which knows my language, and I speak to him where this train is going.
Markaas wuxuu yiri trainkan waa key garashim u jeedi waaye aniga asagaan sugayaa.
Yeah, then he said, yeah, I'm going to Gresham, and this train is the Gresham one. That's how I went home that day with a very fearful and
2013 ki tasay qabsatay kadib markaa waxaan bartay community an eco ayaan bartay.
Yeah, when that incident happened after that, it was 2013, then, and I was new to the country, I learned